Previously on Willing to Adapt.
It's Lemony Snicket's
The are you children... actually sincere right now?
I'm actually sincere.
Oh, geez.
The Children of Unfortunate Events or something?
Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate
series
Events.
Of unfortunate...
The books are characterized by Victorian Gothic tones and absurdist textuality. The books are noted for their dark humor, sarcastic storytelling, and anachronistic elements. A word here which means pieces that do not fit within each time period.
Haha.
We will be discussing specifically the 2004 adaptation, the film.
Correct.
The very first one. This is one of those weird times where the movie made some big changes, and yet it felt so true to the books at the same time. It's a great way to encompass the series into this one small thing. Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. And welcome back to Willing to Adapt. I am Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
This is our third and final episode for A Series of Unfortunate Events. In the first one, we talked about the book, all the behind the scenes, how it was created, and the secrets, and VFD, and so on and so forth, things that were get very complicated. And in the second episode, we talked about the 2004 film adaptation by Brad Silberling, which we both really loved. But if you have not listened to either of those episodes, we highly recommend that you go back and listen to them, because they will give a lot of information that will be helpful on this one. And so we'll give you a moment. Go back. Go listen right now.
All right. I went back and listened to them, and now I'm back.
Great. All right. So today we are talking about the Netflix TV show version that came out between 2017 and 2019. Three seasons, 25 episodes, starring Neil Patrick Harris, Patrick Warburton, Melina Weissman, Lewis Haynes, K. Todd Freeman, Presley Smith, Dylan Kingwell, blah, 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 so on and so forth, and a lot of many, many other people like Joan Cusack, Catherine O'Hara, and a lot of other people.
Yes.
This one was, finally, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, which was the original director for the film adaptation before things changed. So he really wanted to do it.
Yep.
And I watched this when it first came out.
Okay.
And I've seen it all the way through once, and I've seen... obviously, the first four for this time around. This was your first time, wasn't it?
So, it was my first time watching... how many episodes did we watch total? Six?
Six for the podcast.
And then I happened to... we watched...
I made Romy watch the last one in the first season so that we can have some good discussion.
Yes. So, it was my first time watching everything from episode two on for the first time.
Oh, so you've seen the first one.
I saw the first episode.
So you didn't get any of the VFD stuff yet.
No, in fact...
because that starts in the second one.
In fact, it did not play out like I remembered it. I must have a horrible memory, because this seems to be a running theme in our podcast, is when I've seen it before, it's not... that's, whether it was The Outsiders or Cinderella, the movie...
Yep.
It's just not how I remembered it. And so same thing here. I had a memory of what I thought I remembered. And then watching the first episode all over again, I was like, what the heck? Where did this come from? It fit the book. I had just read the book, so it fit the book, but not my memory. So I did watch the first episode maybe roughly the time it came out. When did it come out again? 14?
17.
17. 15, 16, 17. So no, I probably watched it about maybe about 18. I'm trying to remember what grade my daughter was in. So I want to say that season two had not come out yet, but the season one was out. So somewhere around there. And we never finished because my daughter, she would go back and forth between her mom and I. And so she wanted to make sure she was caught up, and you know, so she finished it at her mom's. And to be honest, back then, since I really didn't know anything about the series, it wasn't top of my plate.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one was very popular. It did extraordinarily well.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about this one is it also had Daniel Handler, who is the pseudonym Lemony Snicket, as a writer for it. And he had a team. He had people working with him to help him, but he was the one kind of leading that charge.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting because there were some things I was not a fan of at first that when I found out he was writing made me have to reevaluate a little bit. You know? It's one of those where it's like things change and it's different, and then you're like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. But then you find out that it's still the same creator and you're like, oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't know how to move on from that. Let me process that. One of the things is the books, he purposely leaves things to the imagination of the readers. But in the TV show, it's all pretty spelled out for you.
Yeah.
Almost too much, in my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, it's fun, but it definitely, it's almost like they're holding your hand, it seems like, at times. But that's me. I thought they did a good job of having the first episode not talk about VFD, and then the second one, like, opening with it.
Okay.
And so it's like, oh, by the way, all this was going on.
Yeah.
So I thought that was clever. That was pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, what did you think? Did you enjoy this?
So I did. Coming from the movie,
it's very different.
It was very different. Not just that, but it was kind of like, what would be a great and good analogy for this? It was kind of like you just had a great, okay, I like pizza.
Sure. So I love pizza.
I just had a great pizza. It was well done, well cooked, great toppings. And then someone wants to order Domino's. I mean, that's kind of what it was like. I like Domino's, don't get me wrong.
That's funny.
It's better than Pizza Hut. But
Little Caesars.
You know what? It's been forever, though, with the commercials that I've been seeing lately. I know, but I do remember, like, when you first get it and you're hungry.
Oh, when you're hungry, you don't care.
Yeah. The books to me are kind of like Little Caesars.
Oh.
the Netflix show is Domino's. So compared to the movie, it was like that.
Sure.
It was kind of like fast food next to, you know, a nice course dinner. Where this the movie, the cinematic one, was really well done. And so with that, however, as they started to reveal things that were not revealed in the books, it started to grow on me.
Okay.
I want to say the Uncle Monty episodes, even though at first I questioned some aspects of it, but I liked some of how they did that. I did not like the Anne Josephine. This was probably, she was,
I thought the actress who played her was funny, but it was a little insufferable.
After watching, what's her name?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
It's hard to come back from Meryl Streep.
It is hard. And so watching her, I felt like she was almost like the in the Cinderella one with the fairy godmother. I got the same.
Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, I felt like she was flat, the Aunt Josephine in this one. And to me, compared to how Meryl Streep did it.
Right.
I guess the way I had it envisioned in my head from reading
Meryl
the book.
Meryl Streep plays her in a way that you feel kind of bad for her, whereas, was it Viola Davis?
Yeah.
She plays it a little bit more like the book in a way that, like, she's just annoying.
Yeah, but even in the book, I didn't get, she was annoying, but not as annoying.
No.
This one, I was disappointed in her. And so I'm really glad you had me watch the other two afterwards, because that kind of, it filled in something. It kind of, that episode left a bad taste in my mouth. This one kind of redeemed it a bit.
For those who have not seen A Series of Unfortunate Events, the Netflix show, you know, there'll be, again, some spoilers here for you. So if that is something you are concerned about, maybe go watch it.
Yeah.
It's not that long.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back. Anyway, so in the show, it decides, I think for its betterment, it decides to break up each book into two episodes.
Yes.
It's similar when we talked about Pride and Prejudice, when we talked about the BBC adaptation, because it was, what, 6 episodes for that book?
I think so.
And so they were able to cover everything.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that in this case is these are kids' books. This isn't a novel.
Yeah.
And so they show everything and more. And I think because it was 2 episodes and they were usually about an hour or 50 minutes, they were able to show a lot more behind the scenes, which in some ways was actually really cool and I think was very well done for them. But I also think that they sometimes added in things that just didn't really need to be added in. like in the first episode, there's all these added bits that are just for comedy.
Mm.
Where like it shows Neil Patrick Harris dressing up in Violet's wedding dress, like trying it on to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
And the twin sisters with the white faces are just praising him and stuff like that. It's like, why did this need to be in here?
Yeah.
Like there's stuff like that where it's like, this didn't really need to be here.
So just to step back a bit, what's your overall opinion of Neil Patrick Harris?
I don't like him.
Okay. So
yeah, and that was rough for me because I love A Series of Unfortunate Events, and when I found out he was going to be in it, I was a little upset because I just am not a fan.
Mm.
I haven't seen him in anything that I really like him in.
Okay.
I find him very annoying, and I find that he usually plays similar characters.
Yeah.
When I was watching him in this, I just kept thinking Barney from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Just like a more evil Barney, you know? And so I got really annoyed with him.
Mm.
And I thought at first that I would like that because I hate Count Olaf.
Yeah.
And he's a villain. So I'm like, maybe that'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it doesn't work. I mean,
it didn't work for me because I didn't really take him that seriously when he was evil.
Yeah.
It seemed like he just really wanted to be goofy a lot.
Mm.
Whereas I felt like Jim Carrey had a better balance between the two. I couldn't really get behind Neil Patrick Harris. I feel
like he's trying to be a poor man's Jim Carrey.
He felt too quippy for me.
Yeah.
Everything had to be a joke. Everything had to be dumb.
Yeah.
Because the Olaf of the books is very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes him scary.
Yeah.
Whereas in the TV show, he just almost felt idiotic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if I'm biased, but I just wasn't a fan.
No, so I don't dislike him completely. I've kind of been ambivalent. I know in the...
I get over it. Like, you have to watch it. You have to get over it if you watch it.
Yeah, but. But in the geek community, I know he's very highly praised in a lot of things he does.
He has very specific fan base.
Yes.
And I'm very aware that he has a very specific fan base.
He does.
And I find that a lot of the things that his fan base like about him are things that I can't stand.
Okay.
Like when he did his online thing, was it Dr. Horrible's sing-along hour or whatever it is?
I remember hearing about that. I've never seen it.
He was like really popular for a while for that, and some people really liked it, and I found it so annoying.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'm not quite as annoyed with him, but I will say, like I said, right now I felt like he was a poor man's Jim Carrey.
Sure.
And so he paled in comparison to him, of course. And
it seemed like he saw that Jim Carrey could be funny as the character, and so he just like went 100%.
No, that's what I felt like. I agree with you. I think he did that, and it's all
like
right.
Anytime he could make a joke, he made a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it felt like there was no balance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I agree. I think
at the end of the day, he's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that.
But it's what we have.
It's funny because I will say I do enjoy the show. Like I really do enjoy the show. It almost feels like an investment because it almost feels like a chore to watch at times.
That's how I felt about
the books,
the Josephine. No, Josephine episodes.
Well, because even the children, which are fine. They felt very flat at times.
Yes.
And like very much like they were in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it to me, because the dialogue is not easy and the dialogue is almost like 85% from the book.
Mm-hmm.
It really felt like stilted.
Mm.
It's like I'm saying my line now.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I think the children do a good job.
Yeah. No, they do.
But it just felt a lot of it was flat.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Even the world... Mm-hmm. Felt really flat to me. Again, the designs were gorgeous. Like, it felt really cool to watch, and it was a very realized world.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the movie, you know it's not real, but it feels very grounded.
Yeah.
The TV show, it just felt really fake.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. That's how I felt in the first two episodes, I think. The first episode, particularly.
I think it's because they really depend on CGI a lot more.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Because there's definitely really nice sets and some real practical sets that they use.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just seemed... It almost felt like a made-for-TV movie, which it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You're like, you watch like an old made-for-TV movie, and you're like, there's just something missing. Something that doesn't feel quite real. Not quite right.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the things I came across in an interview... is Daniel Handler, when talking to Barry Sonnenfeld, said that they wanted the TV show to really flesh out and fully realize the books, which I think they do, but then they wanted it to not be as overproduced. So I definitely think they did that for better or worse.
Yeah.
And so you get a sense of their world, but it almost felt like it was cobbled together. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I'm trying to kind of think back to it.
Yeah. Again, I think the designers did a great job. I just think the final result, there was just something a little off and that it didn't quite fit.
Okay.
It was still really fun though. The TV show, they expand a lot, but they also condense. What they do is, well, I was reading in the incomplete book of secret organizations, whatever it is, you know, because I have the made for TV compendium thing, whatever. And it was talking about how, I guess, even Daniel Handler was pulling from all of his extra, like, auxiliary books for when he was writing the screenplays.
Okay.
And I guess he, at one point, was even talking about writing a sequel to the series.
For Netflix?
No, for the books.
Oh, okay.
And then he just never did it, but he ended up including in the screenplays some of those ideas.
Oh, okay.
And so there's characters that have changed from the books to better befit that. And there's things that you've included in the background and stuff. Oh, plus Daniel Handler, he is the fishmonger on Lake Lacrimose.
Fishmonger.
Yeah. When they're going across, when they're at Lake Lacrimose, and it shows all the people selling things, the guy was selling fish heads.
Oh, that was
him.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's him with like a beard or something.
I remember. I vaguely remember.
Yeah. But I think because, you know what it was? Because when you hear him talk, he feels very flat and very monotone and weird. It felt like all his characters sounded like that.
Yeah. I mean, they were created from him.
Yeah.
That there was a lot of changes. There was a lot of different things. I appreciated the exposition of lore.
Oh, yeah. So the second episode immediately opens with VFD.
Yeah.
And it shows how they're working behind the scenes and have been. And so they're trying to get the children to Uncle Monty, and they're trying to figure out what's going on with the parents and with the organization and everything. But then the one thing that I think the show does well, but also irks me because it falls into that we need to explain everything now, is it explains everything.
Yeah.
And so it's like we have to show how the kids ended up at Count Olaf's. And so we have this whole new thing where Olaf pretends to be someone and goes in and makes Mr. Poe put the kids in his service. And it just is literally every little thing. So like in the books, it's a little creepy because you don't know how he gets where he goes and you don't know what he's doing. And it's a mystery. But in the show, it's like, we can see it right there. He's doing it. Yeah. You know, mystery gone.
I don't know. I don't have anything to add.
The one thing I do like is it does do a good job of hinting at things to get you to keep watching. So like by showing the tunnels underneath, which are something that show up in later books.
Okay.
They're not as prevalent in the books, but they do play some key parts.
Okay.
And so I did like that they open with him in the tunnel. Because immediately as a reader, you're like, oh,
yeah, I see. For an Easter egg, if you will.
It definitely seemed like they wrote this for the readers.
Probably.
It seemed like they wrote it for the readers, but then included just enough for the non-readers.
Okay. Well, I know they created at least one character.
They've created many characters and they've condensed characters.
Okay.
Here's a fun Easter egg. Barry Sonnenfeld. Apparently, I guess when he makes movies, there will be a picture of him somewhere in his movies. Somewhere. I don't know, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a tradition. And so in every episode, there's a picture or some sort of image of him.
Really? That's funny.
He is Ike on the horse.
Oh, really?
That's Barry Sonnenfeld.
That's funny.
The guy with the glasses and the cowboy hat?
Yeah.
That's him.
That's funny.
And there's a lot of different ones where he's just in all the episodes as different characters in like portraits or things.
Yeah.
Or a bust or something, you know. It's one of those things where it's like, it's kind of dumb. It didn't need to be there, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
One thing that they do differently in this, which I like to refer to as the Marvel curse. is everything has to be funny.
Yeah, that is Marvel curse.
They turned all of Count Olaf's troop into like comedians.
Mm-hmm.
So in the books, you don't always see them all together.
No.
Sometimes you see one or two and then they switch them out depending mm-hmm. on where they're at, what's going on. But you don't see them all together very often.
No, and they're creepier in the book too.
Yeah, they're just evil in the book. Yeah, like they're just straight up like, we're going to kill you
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do all these nasty things. Whereas in the TV show, they're just weird and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like they threaten with violence, but you just don't take them seriously because of all the comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did read somewhere where the show was considered to be more humorous and quirky or something like that, mm-hmm. which is funny, which is the same complaint they had about, what's his name? Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's funny because I guess from early on, Daniel Handler or other people were talking about making A Series of Unfortunate Events into a musical, like a movie musical.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they end up adding in songs to the TV show.
Oh. Yeah, this one calls it whimsical.
Well, it is.
Yeah. So wait, outside of the opening credits, and the ending?
There's a couple episodes here and there where there's a song.
Okay, because I know...
Even the part when the children come home in the first episode, or the second one, and they're singing, he's the count, he's the count, he's the count.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Okay.
That was all added in.
The season finale song was very evident. I was like, where is this coming from?
It was a little weird.
Yeah.
I was not a fan. I remember watching that going like, why? Mm. Why did this need to be here? It just felt pigeonholed, you know?
I'm sure they like it too, but that's also kind of on par for Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess from the very beginning, they wanted him.
Mm.
I guess Barry Sonnenfeld saw him in a musical.
Okay.
And was like, I want him. And so they were like at a dinner party, and he wasn't even chosen as the director yet. And he's like, I might be a director for something. And if I am, would you like to be in it? But I can't tell you what it is. And I guess Neil Patrick Harris was like, okay. One of the things that saves the show
mm-hmm.
are the tertiary characters.
Mm.
Like Justice Strauss.
Yeah.
Justice Strauss, specifically because she's Joan Cusack and she's amazing. Like these characters, side characters do such an interesting job of keeping you interested.
Yeah.
That I think they really are some of the backbone of the show.
They are definitely the strength. Now that you mention it, as I'm kind of thinking back on the episodes, they are the strength of each episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that the show does that you see a lot now in reboots and remakes and things is overly explains at times
mm-hmm.
why people do what they do and how they do what they do. And so in the TV show, they turn Justice Strauss into a woman who always wanted to be an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that wasn't a thing in the books.
No.
And so that makes it, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So then it makes it so that she's really excited to be an actress and be in Count Olaf's play.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I did not like about it is it seemed like an afterthought that he asked her to be in the play.
Yeah, it did seem
but
kind of
she
rushed.
Had to be in the play for it to work. So it makes me wonder, like, what was he trying to, like, what would he have done? Because he had to marry her, you know?
Yeah.
There's things like that, you know, where it almost seems like it wasn't all the way thought out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just one example. But, like, one of them that I thought was hilarious is they talk up how much Aunt Josephine is scared of all these things. Like, she will not answer the phone, and she won't push on a doorknob, and all these things. And yet, when she's running away from Count Olaf, she leaps out of her window and drives a jet ski across Lake Lachrymose.
Only to become fearful again at the cave.
It's like, you just did that for the comedy. Like, that makes no sense for her character.
Yeah.
It was things like that that would bother me. It's things that they include for, like, no reason almost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the designs.
Okay.
I really did. I thought it was interesting that they set it between the 30s and like kind of the 20s, 30s mm-hmm. and into like the 60s. And they said there's some things from the 70s, especially later on you'll see, but that's about it. But they wanted to keep it really nebulous still.
Okay.
And so that was an interesting choice to do that. I also think they wanted to differentiate from the movie.
Yeah, which they definitely did.
The one thing that they did that I don't quite understand why... To me, it seems like Daniel Handler has been doing this for so long that he almost forgets why he does things.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because there's things that he was really firm on early on that he almost abandons later.
Hmm.
Early on, he was very much of the mind that nobody knows what Lemony Snicket looks like.
Mm.
And he would pretend to be Lemony Snicket's literal handler.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's funny that's his name. But like, he would pretend to be like his go-between guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he, like, in all the pictures and the books and on the websites and stuff, you never know what he looks like.
He's supposed to be in hiding or something in the books,
yes,
isn't he?
Yeah. He's because, mm-hmm. well, one, later on you find out that people think he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But two, he's wanted.
Okay.
He's wanted for something he didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's for arson, but he was framed by the other side of VFD.
Okay.
And they never really go into all the details, but you get the gist. And so he had to flee the country for a while. And so that's why he's running, always looking into the Baudelaires. But what makes him interesting is in the books, he's an unreliable narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never quite know what he's saying is quite true.
Mm.
In the TV show, he's reliable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's blatantly there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what he looks like.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand why they did that route.
If they chose... Was it Richard Warburton?
Patrick Warburton.
There's a voice. You would know automatically who it was.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
The movie.
But you know, Jude Law's voice.
In the movie, it took me a little while to remember that was Jude Law's voice.
Sure.
So yeah.
Yeah, but that's not him in the shot though. It's somebody else.
Is it?
It's not Jude Law. It's just the voice of Jude Law.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was such a big deal for the books and like everything attached to it. But it's weird because in interviews and stuff, Daniel Handler has said they wanted to show him and that like they didn't want to do what they did in the movie where you don't really see him and stuff. So it almost felt to me like they just really tried to distance themselves from the film. And they just made things very different.
Yeah.
And I just never understood why they went the route of showing him, because later on in the books and in the TV show, you actually meet Lemony Snicket, like the kids meet him.
Yeah.
Very briefly. And it would have been so much more compelling for the audience not to know what he looks like until that moment.
Mm.
So it would have been much more interesting, I think, because we know what he looks like.
Yeah.
So then it doesn't mean anything then, you know,
yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Other than he's wrapped up in the story now. But I think the way they handled it was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was really almost theatrical,
mm-hmm.
and that was kind of cool. There's just things that just weren't quite consistent that bothered me.
Hmm. But that happens when you change mediums, you know, whether you're going from, when you go from one to another, there sometimes will make changes that meant something to the original. Because I think one of the things too in with the release of the Netflix series is that it was meant for a different generation.
Oh, for sure.
And because I just remembered, I had mentioned my daughter watched the first episode with my daughter, and then she watched the rest of it. But her and her friends were either late elementary, early middle school, I can't remember. And they were all into it. And this is what, 10 years after you watched it?
Yeah, 14-ish.
Yeah. And so it was definitely made for a different generation. And of course, I'm sure you picked up on even little things in the script that were hinting this is for a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some things were a little blatant at times.
Yeah, there was things that made it a little metaphysical and like really tongue-in-cheek and literal, like breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Which I was like, okay. But I just think the one thing that, I think there's a balance when it comes to explaining how things happen and over-explaining. Because especially when you get later on in the series, like when you get to the third season, they really explain everything in a way that is not true to the books anymore.
Oh, okay.
Like in regards to the schism with VFD and stuff. Because in the books, a lot of it's left a little open up in the air.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But the TV show really condenses and really simplifies and gives like very specific reasons.
Yeah.
And it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I'd watch the show again, but I go in watching it knowing that it is a little bit of a slog.
Okay. Yeah, it was. That's why I'm after doing our podcasts on this series, I probably wouldn't continue it until I read the books first.
I think you'd like it more if you read the books first.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of Easter eggs.
Mm.
Like, you can definitely tell, like, they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like... Here's Here's something. I'm going to say something that's going to sound mean, and I don't want it to necessarily sound mean. It seems like they created the TV show. I know I said they wrote it for the readers, because I definitely think that they included a lot of Easter eggs and things that only the readers would really get. Mm-hmm. I think as a whole, it seems like they wrote the show for an audience that will never read the books.
Yeah.
They really simplified things and almost dumbed it down a bit. Mm-hmm. And stuff. To be fair, it sounds like I'm really just hammering in that I don't like this show. I do enjoy the show. It's just really difficult when you compare the two.
Yeah.
There's some things they did I thought they were really well done. Mm-hmm. And especially what I thought was really well done is in regards to the first two guardians. So like Uncle Monty and Aunt Josephine.
Okay.
More Uncle Monty than anything else, but it seems like they packed in more. And so they filled in some stuff. So in the books, the kids go to the movies.
Correct.
With him.
Yeah.
And in the unauthorized autobiography, you find out VFD's trying to send him a message.
Yeah.
And so they just include that in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing about him being... The one thing I did not like is that he's a member of VFD, and yet he still thought that Count Olaf was someone from the Herpetological Society. And I was like, kind of drop the ball there, Monty. You should know that he's out there looking for the children. Like, mm-hmm. You're with VFD, man. You just looked at a message saying take the children to Peru.
Yeah.
So there's things like that where I'm like, the writing was good until it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so it's like...
What I'm hearing you say is that they added in stuff but didn't know how to properly connect it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So it seems like their heart was in the right place. They mm-hmm. just couldn't sort it out all the way.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I think it does a better job because in the books, there's a lot of times where the kids could have done something mm-hmm. and they didn't. Mm-hmm. Or the kids could have said something or whatever and they didn't. Whereas in the show... It takes a lot of those opportunities away from them.
Mm.
And so I think it works better from a storytelling standpoint.
Yeah.
And it includes things. It gives the kids a little bit more agency, I think. But then it also includes elements that make more sense to the story.
Mm.
So like for Uncle Monty in the reptile room, they include, like we were talking about, the big vault door
mm-hmm.
to get into the reptile room. And he pretends that it's this crazy lock, but there really is no lock.
Yeah.
And so... In the book, Stefano, Count Olaf as Stefano shows up, and they kind of don't do much.
Mm-hmm.
But in the TV show, they go and they hide in yeah. the reptile room to get away from him.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I get that. That makes a lot of sense to me, you know?
Yeah.
And then, okay, the one thing that I never made sense to me in the book, which I think they did very well in the show,
mm-hmm.
in the book, the hook-handed man plays the coroner.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got fake hands.
Yeah.
But the kids know what he looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book, they never get that it's him. And so they just let Olaf leave with him to take him to prison or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they escape because he's his henchman. And I remember as a kid being like, okay, like you would know what he looks like. Not that much time has passed.
Yeah.
His hands are clearly fake.
Yeah.
You know? So in the show, it's the person who's either a man or a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Nurse Lucafont.
Yeah.
So I thought that was better done.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, because the kids aren't fooled at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stuff like that. And then the show really liked to have all of the acting troupe together all the time.
Yeah, I was explaining that to my wife as we were watching. I'm like, in the book, it was just one henchman yeah. at a time.
Because you think that it'd be more obvious if mm-hmm. they were all together all the time.
Yeah. But they're there for the comedy.
They really are.
Yes.
I hate to say this. Because I didn't think this at first, but when I was reading the companion book,
because mm-hmm.
they were talking about that character who's like neither a man or a woman,
mm-hmm.
and the way they describe him in the book, you could tell is a little woke.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I realized after I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, they did go that route.
Yeah.
They weren't as obvious as they could have been.
It was a little before its time.
A little bit. Just a tad. Just mm-hmm. slightly... before its time, but getting there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it did very well. I think what they did that was smart is they had the first season, but they weren't sure if they were going to do the next two.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they heard that Netflix wanted to do another season, they told them, we will not do another season unless you automatically allow us to do the third. Because that way we can just move right on to the third.
Okay.
And we don't have to worry about the children getting too old.
Oh, okay.
Because there is a little bit of a time jump. There's a little bit of an age difference between the first season and the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And they draw attention to it in a way that I think is stupid.
Mm.
But whatever. But because they did the second season and the third season like right next to each other,
yeah,
they were able to make it so that the kids didn't age out.
Okay.
Which I thought was smart.
Mm-hmm.
Fun little trivia is Neil Patrick Harris in the first season, for that eye tattoo, he had to constantly get like a fake one put on,
yeah,
for makeup. But when he knew he was going to come in for the next two seasons, he had a real tattoo.
Oh, really?
He went and got a tattoo of the eye on his ankle so he didn't have to worry about it.
That's funny.
So he still has a tattoo of an eye on his ankle.
That's dedication.
Unless he had it removed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I probably will go back and finish watching it once, yeah, I read the books, if you I get should. Around.
One thing they did that I thought was smart, but I did not appreciate it when I first started watching it,
mm-hmm,
is when you watch it at the end of the first episode, one of the ways that they get you to keep watching it,
mm-hmm,
is they show two parents being taken away, oh, yeah, in a van.
Yes, that confused
me. And they say, we have to get back to the children. I'm worried about the children.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh. And so people who have not read the books are like, it's their parents. It's their parents. They're alive. And they hint that. They hint that all season that it's the parents. And as a reader, you see that and you're like, what? You're changing this?
Mm-hmm.
What is this? And when you get to the end of the season, so they keep inserting them in ways that are not in the book.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the end of the season, you realize they're the parents of the Quagmire children.
Which I happen to know what that is just because I've read it on Netflix. Not Netflix, sorry, Wikipedia.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's the children you see at the very end of the first season opposite.
Yeah. Them. And I only knew who the kids were. Like at first when they show up in a house and with other kids, I'm like, what the heck is all this?
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until, and I was still trying to figure it out overnight because I watched them two different days. And when they show the final scene at the school.
Where they have the spyglass.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they show the other two kids and they mention being survived. I'm like, oh, I vaguely remember,
yeah,
reading about.
Yeah, they play a major role in the next book.
Okay.
Which the next episode would be on.
Okay.
Which is why you see them there.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah.
And so I read in the book, in the little companion book,
mm-hmm,
that they did that partly on purpose,
mm,
because they knew that it would probably piss off readers of the book, but then it would excite people who weren't.
Mm.
But then it would be enough to keep both, mm-hmm, watching to figure out what it was going to end up being.
Okay.
And then when you get to the end of the first season, when you find out it's not the parents,
mm-hmm,
all the people who thought it was the parents are going to feel really bad about it and are now going to be like, who are these people?
Yeah.
But then all the people who were readers are going to be vindicated.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, we know who they are.
Yeah.
And so I remember when I watched it for the first time, I was a little upset when, mm-hmm, I watched the first episode
because,
mm-hmm, I was like, they're alive.
So it had the desired effect on you
a little bit, but I was also aware enough that I'm like, there's no way they're alive. Like, that changes so much. Like,
it made me wonder if it was,
I didn't think it was the Quagmire parents.
I was like, are we watching flashbacks? Are we
no watching... It could have been flashbacks because they're literally attached, like with phone calls and then with the plane overhead.
Yeah,
and
that gave it away that it wasn't. Yeah. But I was going through my head all the different possibilities.
I kept trying to figure out who they were. But part of me was aware that I think they're messing with us and that, mm-hmm, these aren't the parents. But because I wasn't sure,
yeah.
I was like, because here's the thing. In the books, there are times where they think maybe the parents are still alive,
mm-hmm,
or maybe one of them's alive. Like, that's one of the things they toy with you with.
Yeah.
And so that ends up being a thing later on with the Quagmire parents is, mm, like, or is it their parents? Because they just say there's a survivor of a fire.
Oh, okay.
Because they don't say... You end up finding some stuff later on, I'm just going to say. But so I was thinking when I was watching it, knowing the books, I'm like, are they going to do this in a way where it is the parents, but then in the end they're not alive because something ends up happening to them?
Mm, okay.
But it ends up playing into the story because, like, I could see them doing something like that,
mm-hmm,
but you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought that in retrospect was very well done. Especially to keep fueling the VFD thing.
Yeah.
I definitely think the way they handled the VFD thing was a little fast and loose at times.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing with Jacqueline and Gustav in like the first couple episodes and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it was well done, But then again, I think it was one of those things where they had good intentions and they just couldn't carry it out right. Because the whole thing with them at the theater is they were going to save the day. But it's like, how are you going to save the day if you're just sitting there and not doing anything?
And then
at the last minute you come in and like, that was weird. But then when they're at Uncle Monty's, it insinuates that she was the statue the whole time. I'm like, why were you just standing there waiting the whole time? And if you weren't and you just appeared later on and took the place of the statue, why? So it was like one of those things where it's like, it's cool you were there, but why? And why didn't you do something? And, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like one of those things where if you really start to peel it away, you're like, this doesn't quite hold water, in my opinion. But it gets you interested, at least, I guess.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And I agree with you. I think it was, like I said, there's a reason why I defined it the way I did as my Domino's pizza.
There you go.
It was enjoyable, but, you know.
Yeah.
Just not the movie. Yeah. No, I, like I said, if I get the time, because I have a lot on my plate for reading.
Sure.
I would like to finish the series. And there's a lot of books.
I think you should read the books, or at least listen to them.
Yeah.
Either way, if you listen or read the books, I think you'll appreciate the show more.
Okay. Well, I would actually probably read them first.
That's what I mean.
Just because I'm glad, because originally I thought about reading a book. Well, then there was the movie, so I had to watch all three together. But I thought, well, I'll just read one book and then read the two corresponding episodes. And in retrospect, I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah, it's a good thing you didn't.
Yeah, so I would probably do the same thing here, where I would just finish the series and then go and read it.
Yeah, go watch it.
Watch it, sorry.
Yeah. There are things they do in the show in the next two seasons that I think are very well done. And then obviously there's times that are, they're not as well. But there are things that they do in the next two seasons that I think you will like.
Okay.
You will like them more if you've read the books.
Okay. I mean, it's good to know.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, I've told people, you don't have to have read the books to understand and appreciate and enjoy this show. But if you have read the books, and especially if you're a fan of the books, you will get more out of it.
Yeah. No, you do. And I, if it wasn't for the time thing, and thankfully these are easy reads.
Oh, yeah.
It's no Dostoevsky.
No.
So no. I could probably listen to them, if anything, on my drives.
Yeah. One of the things I was talking about, they condense characters and stuff, is in the books, you find out that Mr. Poe's sister, Eleanor Poe, is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Punctilio. But the reporter that's constantly out there that the children come across is someone else.
Oh, okay.
So in the TV show, they combined his sister and that reporter together and made him his wife.
Oh, because I don't remember. I was like, I don't remember her being a reporter.
No,
in the
you
books.
Meet her very briefly at the beginning of the first book and then never again.
Okay.
Yeah. But because you find out later on that his sister, almost like in passing, you find this out, his sister is the editor-in-chief. It's just like they just simplified. They simplified a lot.
Okay.
So like even later on, when you get to the Grim Grotto, there's a father and a daughter character. And they take out the father from the situation in the show. And they just have the daughter. Things like that.
Okay. I'm looking for the book right now.
Which one?
Well, because even though I watched the fourth episode, I haven't actually read the book.
Read it. It's different.
I kind of wondered who it would be different just because the miserable mill.
Yeah. Well, here's the biggest difference. Because you've read the end of Wide Window. At the end of Wide Window,
they're with Mr. Poe.
They're with Mr. Poe, and it just assumes they're going to leave again with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the show, they run after Count Olaf. Because that's the show trying to make them more active.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so in the beginning of Miserable Mill, they're on a train with Mr. Poe going towards the mill.
Okay.
Yeah, and you get the impression that Mr. Poe didn't know that the children were going to go work. Because he doesn't stay with them to drop them off. Like, he has to leave right away. And so they enter by themselves and find out that they have to work.
Okay. Well, I'm downloading it right now.
Yeah, whereas in the show, you saw Mr. Poe's looking for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of figured that would be different just based on the way it ended.
Right. That's why I wanted you to watch them. Well, that one, and because the parents, I wanted you to watch The Miserable Mill.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad you did. Gave me some resolution.
Yes. All right. Well, anything else you want to discuss?
Nope. I think we're about good.
I don't want to give a whole lot away because you might go and watch it.
Yeah.
But I think we've covered everything for the most part.
Yeah, I think we have.
I think it really does a good job of giving you the books. Mm-hmm. I think they make some changes and they add a lot and they really show a lot of the behind the scenes that are going on. But generally, it's the books for the most part.
Okay.
Well, that's it. Nothing else for you?
I'm done.
All right. Well, then you want to do ratings, characters, or adaptations?
We'll do favorite characters.
All right. So, favorite character, and you can tell me book, you can tell me movie, you can tell me show, or all three.
I don't know if I had any favorite character in the book.
It'd be Aunt Josephine in the movie, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Meryl Streep.
You know what? Yes, I did like her character, but I think overall, for some reason, I really am not sure, Violet really stuck out.
In the movie?
In the movie, to me.
Oh, Emily Browning does a great job.
Yeah. Like, I think whereas the kid who played her brother, he didn't get on my nerves as much as the Netflix version does sometimes.
Both Violet and Klaus in the TV show would every once in a while annoy me.
Okay, yeah, same here. But the Violet in the movie, I was really impressed with.
She's endearing. Mm-hmm. Like, you really feel that she's like the older sister trying to keep them together.
Yeah, maybe as a only child, I guess that kind of resonated with me.
Sure.
Not only child, sorry.
An only child.
Sorry, sisters. The oldest child is what I meant. That resonated with me. So as my, I
you
did
get some
like
nasty
Meryl.
Letters from your sisters.
If they even listen to this, I don't even know if they know we have a podcast.
Then you get one letter saying, yes, we did listen to it.
So, but I think that her character is probably what stood out most for me in that, in the overall movie.
Not Jim Carrey?
No, you know what? I, as a character actor and his presentation, Stefano. Stefano, that was his pinnacle in the movie.
That's so funny. I love his comb over.
Yes.
You know what that was funny is because his mustache isn't quite the same. Mm-hmm. And so like one of it just kind of sticks up.
Yes.
And then later on, because he improvises so much. Mm-hmm. Later on, did you hear him talk about his mustache?
I vaguely remember.
He was talking about how like he was, I think he was like trying to milk an animal or something.
Yes.
And then he ended up having like have complete facial reconstruction. And he's like, I think they did a great job.
Yes.
And he's like, although my mustache isn't quite
right.
the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Between him and Meryl Streep, it was a good movie overall. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Then what about in the
That's
TV show?
Hard. I mean, I might have to go with Joan Cusack.
She's mine. She's yeah. mine. In the show, she's definitely my favorite.
Yeah.
Which, because she's only in like the, okay, well, I don't want to give anything away. I'll just say she comes back later on.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
Okay.
You can look forward to that.
Yeah.
There is another character in the show later on that I really like, mm-hmm. but you haven't met her yet.
Oh, okay.
You'll meet her next episode.
Okay. At the school?
Yes.
Oh, perfect.
She's one of those characters they changed from the book, though.
Mm.
They made her a lot more likable in the show.
Oh, okay.
Because what they do with her character is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because one of the things, we didn't mention this. In the show, we really should say this. I don't know. I got distracted. In the show, they really expand on the spyglass.
Oh.
It plays a major role in the show.
Okay.
And so it's a code breaker. It like helps them see things. It deciphers things.
Oh, I haven't gotten to that either.
Yeah, you did.
No, they barely got it back after the fire.
No, remember, because like Uncle Monty was using it in the movie theater
to look
get
at the
message.
The messages.
Stuff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Mm. Things like that. So they really expand on that. So it actually does stuff. But then the one thing the show added in that's nowhere else, not in the books, not in the movie, is the big book, The Incomplete History of Secret Organizations.
Yeah.
And so it shows it in the first episode with Joan Cusack as Justice Strauss.
Mm-hmm.
And it hints that there's something going on. And then you find it a couple more times in the show. And then it becomes a major part later on.
Okay.
So it's in Aunt Josephine's safe. That's where you see a lot of it.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And so that's something that I thought was interesting. I almost don't know why you would have that as a secret organization. But there you go. Part of me felt like it was like product placement, you know? Like they yes. wanted to make that, so then they had to put it in the show.
I think it was. I think it was a big, hey, audience, in case you haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
We're just making it blatantly obvious for you.
A little. But those are things that they added in that are very different from the books.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm. No, they were. Yeah, no, I caught that one, and I caught the spyglass thing being more of a... I forgot about the Uncle Monty, but still, it was in every episode. Actually, no, it wasn't in the Josephine episode, if I remember right, because it got stolen.
The spyglass is not in it, but you know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't come back until the mill, end of the mill episode, if I remember right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that is, you didn't read this book, so you wouldn't know this, but in the show, they made it so that Dr. Orwell mm-hmm. in the Miserable Mill, in the book, it's more along the lines that she's just an evil person working with Count Olaf.
Oh, okay.
And she's really just like an optometrist.
Mm-hmm.
And she will hypnotize people because she's the one hypnotizing the people in the mill to make them work. But in the show, they change it so that she was once a member of VFD and was Olaf's girlfriend, and that she's using an old VFD headquarters or like depot or whatever, mm-hmm. outpost. And so they really lean into the whole VFD thing.
Okay.
But for characters in the book, I don't know if I have a favorite character from the book. In the movie, it might be Count Olaf. Jim Carrey's Count Olaf.
Okay.
Just because he's so funny. But he does such a good job. I really like Violet in it as well. Sunny is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Sunny's really funny. And Meryl Streep does a great job too. But it's probably Count Olaf.
Okay.
And then in the show, John Cusack.
Mm.
And then I think Sunny gets like special mention.
Because mm-hmm.
there's definitely times where she is funny.
In the show? She is.
Like, no, like really?
They've done well with that character.
Do you know Tara Strong?
Yes, I do.
She does the voice of Sunny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar with her work.
I figured you were. She does a lot.
She does.
Wasn't she in Rugrats?
Yes. In fact, so I got to see her. I think she did one of the voices. I saw her at a panel at Comic-Con some years ago.
She was Tommy, right?
I don't remember which one. She might. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so ratings then. On a scale of 1 to 10.
I already gave my pizza rating.
Yeah.
But on the scale of 1 to 10.
Do the movie first. We're going chronological.
So the movie, I want to put, I will say... The movie rated about an 8 for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
I want to give it a 9.5.
Okay.
Yep. I don't want to give it a 10. Wait, did I give it a 10? What did I give it a 10?
What did you give a 10 to?
Yeah, what did I give it a 10? Did I give it a 10? Did we rate this already?
No, I don't think so.
We didn't rate it.
No, you think it's Cinderella.
I'm thinking Cinderella.
Yeah.
Got it.
I'm really close to an 8.5. Yeah.
Part of me like wants to just give it the 10, but I also don't think I need to give it the 10.
Yeah.
I think I'll give it a 9.5. Okay. Yeah. I have a great respect for the film.
Yeah, I do too.
And it's definitely one I can rewatch a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. It's just gorgeous.
I have it on DVD now. So.
Nice. Nice. They can't take that away from you.
Yeah.
One thing they did in the film version is it ends with the children sleeping as they drive away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the credit sequence is them being chased by Count Olaf.
Yeah.
Like, is little animated characters. And they did that to show that they're going to be constantly being chased by him for the rest of their lives.
Oh, okay.
It's like a hit hints at what's to come.
Yeah.
It's like supposed to be like their dreams, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the...
Netflix show?
Yeah. What were you going to give it?
A 6.
I was going to say a 6.
Yeah.
It's like, it's good. I'd watch it again at some point, maybe. But I don't need to watch it anytime soon.
No. I think a 6 is good.
Yeah, and it does really good job at some things, but it like drops the ball on other things.
Yeah. No, I agree. All right.
Yeah, 6 is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then this is the time of the show where we talk about what type of adaptation is this? Again, our loyal listeners know all of this, so forgive me. But for those of you who don't, In our trailer for our podcast, we discuss four types of adaptations that I've come up with. The first is true to source material. The second is expanded. The third is artistic. And the last one is message driven. So,
define artistic again for me.
Artistic, I've gotten more loose on this one. But usually it's where like choices are made that are artistic in a way that emphasize like the themes or characterization or things. So, like, example, like if maybe characters are really angry or upset, like it starts raining or things like that. Or there's like symbolism included and metaphors and things like that. That's not from the source material. We were saying that the Keira Knightley Pride and Prejudice is more artistic.
I would have to say the movie, I mean, I might as well just give both, honestly. I feel they're just both expanded, if anything.
Well, I would say the TV show's definitely expanded.
Yes.
Yeah.
The movie,
I would take an artistic one for that one.
Okay, that's what I was...
You know, I would say, you know what I think the ultimate one, though, is it's message-driven. Because it really focuses on more hope.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Like, it definitely leaves you feeling happier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it definitely does.
And that you can overcome the bad things.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I would lean... Yeah, I agree with you on that. I would say also artistic, since they really rearranged it for the medium.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go.
All right.
Did you enjoy this one?
I did. I mean, at first I was having a hard time, but like The Outsiders, eventually
you're
I came
just like,
around.
I gotta trust Eric.
This is it's not three in a row quite, because we had Cinderella. And probably some other one I can't remember, but between what was the ones I was not looking forward to? The Outsiders, had a hard time with this book. There was one other.
Uh-huh. Great Gatsby,
yeah. And I ended up loving the movie.
The Baz Luhrmann's good one.
Yes. I have to say, the movies that have been tied to some of our most recent episodes have been really good.
Oh, yeah.
Really good films.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That won't last.
I know. So, but I did enjoy it. And I'll have to go back and finish the series.
Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, read the books or listen to them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I will say, for those people out there who have never read the books, if you like mysteries or you like uncovering things and you're not afraid of not getting all the answers, you will like them.
But keep in mind, they're written for children or young adults. So
I will say, though, that the TV show, when you get to the end of it, has a happier ending.
Oh, okay.
And the book, the companion book that I was telling you about, it has a code in it that you can do. It's like a secret code.
Yeah.
And when you finish it, it gives you an even happier ending.
Oh, okay.
So I won't say what that is, but...
Okay.
For those of you who have access to the incomplete history of secret organizations and have not done it yet, if you figure out the code or Google it, because we're lazy now,
yep,
you will find out what the actual ending that they have created brand new.
Oh, okay.
And it is happy.
Oh.
And they just tell you. I have mixed feelings on it.
Okay.
Part of me wants to take it as canon because it is Daniel Handler who had a hand in it.
Yeah.
But part of me also wants to not.
Yeah. Go along with the books.
I really think that he's just, I think as he's gotten older and he's been with the success of the books and the movie and now the show, I really think that he's just kind of adapted and changed his mind on some things.
Probably. Creators do that.
Maybe he just kind of lost some of it along the way. I don't know.
Us Star Wars fans have had to deal with...
I mean, he's making money off of it, so...
Yeah, with George Lucas changing his mind about stuff.
Right? You get older.
It's part of the...
You have children.
It's part of the creator's prerogative.
I guess. It's not set in stone.
Nope. All right.
Well, thank you, listeners.
Thank you, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed this one. Tune in for the rest of this season. We have some good ones coming up. Some really interesting episodes.
Hopefully. I'm not sure what they are yet.
Well, our Halloween Just episode kidding. Will be coming up soon.
Yes.
So keep your ears out for that one. Really? And again, if you wanted to let us know anything, you want to send us an email, or you can leave a comment now on Spotify and other things. Let us know what you think. You know, if you think we're off base, you think you've got an argument, you know, whatever. I want to hear it.
If you think Eric's wrong,
yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Yeah, I think we both would.
Like all I said, right. We can always do a revisited.
Exactly.
All right, well, you all take care out there, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, see you next time.
Right, bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review, or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.